This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for December 17, 2010. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And later this half hour, we'll take a look at cash grain with Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, the U.S. and South Korea are spending the weekend trying to finalize a free trade deal begun by the previous administration. We'll have that and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason will talk about a new biofilter for pig fans developed at the University of Illinois. It's all on the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Tom Testale in Morris at 815-941-2184. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Here's how futures settled this Friday afternoon in Kansas City. March wheat, 8.11 and three quarters, up 8.5. May, 8.20 and a quarter, up 8. July, 8.25, up 8. March wheat at the board, 7.56 and three quarters, up 7. May, 7.84 and a quarter, up 7.5. July, 7.94 and a half, up 7. March corn, 5.96 and a half, up 9. May, 6.04 and a quarter, up 8 and three quarters. July, 6.08 and a quarter, up 9 and a quarter. September, 5.61 and three quarters, up 9.5. December, 5.41 and a half, up 9. January soybeans, 12.98 and three quarters, up 9 and three quarters. March, 13.10 and a half, up 10. May, 13.18 and a half, up 11 and a half. July, 13.21 and three quarters, up 12 and a half. August, 12.98 and three quarters, up 12 and three quarters. September, 12.63 and three quarters, up 15. January soybean meal, 3.47.80, up $4. January soybean oil, 54.13, up 6. December live cattle, 102.17 and a half, up 97 and a half. January feeders, 119.02 and a half, up 65. February lean hogs, 75.95, up 137 and one half. And that's Friday's settlements in Kansas City and in Chicago.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says a cool bias in temperatures will remain through the next 10 days. Soft wheat will remain adequately protected from cold by snow, however. A wintry mix of precipitation will fall lightly across the Midwest late this weekend and early next week. Snowfall of 2 to 4 inches is most likely from the Dakotas and Nebraska to northern Ohio Monday into Tuesday, with local amounts to 6 inches. A second snow event is possible in the Midwest December 23rd through the 25th. Snow fell overnight in the Texas Panhandle, benefiting some hard red winter wheat with moisture totals of almost a quarter inch. Eastern Kansas and most of eastern Colorado will continue looking for significant rain and unlikely to find it over the next 10 days.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Before we get to the grain, let's touch on that cattle on feed report, which it appears to me, if you're looking at the totals on feed, 103% placed in November, 106, marketed November, 109. Is there anything for folk to look at coming back on Monday for trade?
It's friendly for corn, Dave. The placements number was about 1% above the average guess from Reuters, and so we were about 1% above on placements. Marketings were up there on the top end of the range as well. The highest number I had seen was just around 111, 112%, so that 109 marketings number for November was real nice to see as well. So I think overall a real good report from a standpoint of corn feeding continuing. As far as whether the market in the cattle had already priced it in, I think we did probably see some squaring of positions. We had been down earlier in the week in feeder cattle, but we were able to come back pretty sharply both late yesterday and again today. So I suspect that maybe the shorts have already covered, but we'll see if it brings any new buyers in or not. I suspect also that with it being a holiday week, we may have to put on hold the real trade of this report until after we come back from Christmas and New Year's.
Let's turn our attention then to the grains. This morning it was sort of a ho-hum kind of day, a little bit choppy, not a lot of direction. Then analytical firm Informa Economics says that farmers will plant 90.755 million acres of corn and 77.565 million acres of beans in 2011, and traders said, yes, let the bidding begin.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and you saw the spreads react accordingly as well, Dave. You saw that the bear spread and the beans worked really, really well, and the December corn kept up very nicely with the March, and so we had new weekly highs posted in the March corn right after those numbers came out. The D's caught on, and then the beans turned around as well, and corn had been our leader all day and most of the week, for that matter, and nothing changed that. The outside markets were mostly quiet in terms of non-threatening. We did have some sharply higher bond markets, and we did have the dollar jump, and when we were on the air in the morning, it was making some new highs, but that was about the high of the day, and then it tapered off as the session wore on. So outside markets stayed non-threatening, and the trade, I think, went back to the Informa numbers and went back to the afternoon weather updates in South America, and Argentina is looking at some rain this weekend, but it looks like on the latest models that the next 6 to 10 days still looks very, very dry and above normal temperatures. So when you combine that and you look at the Informa corn number and you say, okay, if they've got 84 million harvested acres and you use a 156 bushel per acre average yield for the country this next year, you're talking about just over a 13 billion bushel production. You add on top of that USDA 830 million bushel carryover, you keep a 13.5 billion bushel demand, you're talking about a carryover under 500 million bushels, and I think that's really what the trade honed in on and allowed us to hold above the new weekly high. In other words, we got up to 595.5, I believe it was, earlier this week on Wednesday, and we were able to get back up above that level and stay up above that level on a closing basis. So the charts look very, very healthy from a standpoint of where we closed versus where we closed last Friday. We'll see if they have the volume next week to be able to continue it on or not.
We were talking with some of our other analysts earlier in the week, and we're trying to make the point that there is just not enough land, production land out there to do everything that folk would like to see them do, and I'm including things like wheat, things like cotton, sorghum, those kind of things. It appears to me that next year a lot of those questionable acres will be put into play.
I think that's a real valid point. You know, Informa came out with 220.6 million acres of the principal grain crops. That's up 6.5 million from last year. That's very close to what I'm using. I'm actually, for the total number, including cotton and rice and barley, I'm up there in that 254 to 255 million acreage number. That's what we did back in 08. That's what we did back in 2000. But I concede readily that that's going to be very difficult to get without perfect planting weather. So I think that's where the supply side we're trading right now. We're trading bullish South American weather. We're starting now to trade bullish new crop, acreage battle weather, and not being able to build carryover, even in the beans, even if you got a 3.35, 3.4 billion bushel production using Informa's numbers, you kept demand pretty much steady. You're still going to have a hard time getting over 150 million bushels in terms of next year's carryover. However, I would say the trade's factoring that in right now, and the one issue that has not been solved as far as what is the answer, obviously planting weather, but the demand side, Dave, and I think that's where the demand side is going to make a big, big difference here in terms of whether we price in a real big premium early on, kind of like we did in, after the 1980 crop year when we had a very strong rally into the springtime. We get the planting done, and then all of a sudden we come back, and maybe the economy is not as good, demand isn't as good as maybe the trade was thinking, and we've already priced in these low, low carryover numbers, and we essentially erode into the end of the year. That may not happen, but I think history would say that a good likelihood is that could happen, and why not build that into your 2011 marketing plan so you don't have that kind of a bearish surprise after you get done planting and put the planters away into the barn.
Let's focus back in on the weekend as it applies to South America and Argentina. I think the projections are for something like 35% of the soy belt getting some sort of moisture, some sort of precipitation over the weekend before it turns dry again, and maybe 10 days worth of dryness. When you look at the charts, we're at a trigger that we've been trying to keep an eye on around 1306. We keep banging against it, but really can't get through it on a settlement basis. If we only get that 35%, if we get just what was projected, do we come back on Monday and top that trigger?
I think you can. You have to watch your volume. Now, I did note that in some of the Newswire comments this morning, I believe both Wednesday and Thursday, the bean volume was actually double that of corn both days. So the bean volume was there this week. If it's there again next week, and I think the number to watch in the January beans is this week's high of 13, 14 and three quarters. If we can get a close above 13, 15, there's really wide open space there from a chart perspective on the daily chart to get all the way back up into that 1348.5, 1350 high that we made back in mid-November. And I think that's probably the target the trade would be going and shooting after as far as a swing objective if we were able to close above 1315 next week on good volume on the idea that it had not rained and we're still looking at yet another 6 to 10 days of no rain. I think one of the things that pleased me today was that the wheat caught nicely. We actually closed up near the highs of the day, and it was nice to see the Kansas City wheat futures lead the market in terms of leading the Chicago and the Minneapolis, and I think that's really appropriate given the southern plains and what's going on also in China's wheat belt. I think that's probably, when we come back next week, one of the bullish factors that we've priced into corn especially, and one of the issues that the trade kind of left alone in terms of the weaker bean export sales and the real sluggish seven-month low in weekly sales for beans. I think the trade may have to come back and revisit both the corn import demand from China and also the bean import demand from China and see if China's made any new news or new recommendations or plans this weekend. They've tended to let out a lot of news over the weekend, and I look for that again on Saturday or Sunday.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks. Have a great weekend, Dave.
You too. Mike Zuzulow of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stewart-peterson.com.
In agricultural news, U.S. and South Korean officials today begin 3 days of meetings in Seattle aimed at completing work on the final text of changes to the free trade agreement reached earlier this month. Trade negotiators announced a breakthrough to resolve outstanding issues on the U.S. side on a free trade pact originally concluded in 2007. The biggest bilateral trade agreement the U.S. has negotiated since the North American Free Trade Agreement is expected to boost exports of goods to South Korea by as much as $11 billion. The revamped deal mostly involved provisions sought by the U.S. to improve access for auto exports in return for some concessions on the phasing of tariffs on U.S. pork. USDA is considering a compromise approval for genetically engineered alfalfa that would allow the crops to be grown with certain restrictions aimed at protecting non-GE crops. The move marks a shift in policy at USDA to give more consideration to how genetically engineered crops impact organic and non-genetically engineered crops and sets the stage for coexistence considerations for other biotech crops going forward. U.S. Ag Bank and CoBank, two of the nation's largest agricultural lenders, plan to merge next year. The banks are two of the five banks that make up the Farm Credit System, a federally chartered network that accounts for more than a third of lending in rural U.S. The banks said in a joint press release the merger would add geographical diversity and allow them to serve virtually every key agricultural commodity. The merged bank would operate under the name CoBank and be based at CoBank's headquarters outside Denver. The two banks will continue to operate as a borrower-owned cooperative. The banks expect the merger to close on October 1st of next year. It must be approved by shareholders of the two banks, which also must submit a merger disclosure document to the Farm Credit Administration, the independent regulator for the Farm Credit System, for its review and approval. U.S. agribusiness giant Cargill Incorporated could emerge as Australia's biggest wheat exporter following its purchase of AWB Limited's Commodities Management Unit from Canada's Agrum Incorporated. According to an Australian government report, AWB, formerly a state entity with a monopoly over wheat exports, accounted for 27% of the bulk wheat exported last year. Cargill Australia was the third largest with a 12% market share. That would mean that the merged entity would have a near 40% share of the export market. China's National Grain and Oils Information Service says that China's corn output in 2010 was estimated at a record 172.5 million tons, a 5.2% increase over last year. The higher output would leave China with a surplus of 7.5 million tons next year based on median consumption, which could mean that China may not import large volumes of corn from abroad. But the surplus may not be enough given that the state reserves are at a very low level after more than 44 million tons have been sold to the market since last year. The center, in its latest report, also revised upward the 2010 estimate of soy output to 15.2 million tons, up 1.5% from last year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The Extension Agricultural Engineers at the University of Illinois have been working on a cheap and easy biofilter to hog house fans. Todd Gleason reports that they may have found a usable solution to keep down the smell.
The problem with biofilters is that they cost a lot, too much, in fact. A pig farmer cannot afford to buy one and still make money. Ted Funk wondered if it might be possible to build one from things already on the farm, or that were cheap to buy and easy to set up. As it happens, the answer is a sweet-smelling yes.
The materials we're using for the container are mainly built around the a precast silo stave, so a 30-inch long silo stave, 10 inches wide, and it's something that you can pop together in a fairly short order. It doesn't require any poured and reinforced concrete. We're using fairly inexpensive materials for flooring, that is for this porous floor that the air comes up through. We're concentrating on things like wood pallets and chicken flooring, things like that, that they're easily accessible, easy to work with, and fairly low cost.
It works, and Ted Funk says if a farmer were to contact him at the University of Illinois, he could provide enough design information for the farmer to build one. It'd be worth it, too. Here's how the biofilter does the job.
Well, a biofilter is just a layer of organic medium. Think of it as, say, wood chips with some compost mixed in. And what happens with if that medium is kept moist, you get a bacterial film growing on the outside of those particles. You get a biofilm that's able to capture these odorous chemicals in the air coming from our ventilation fans, and they're able to use those as nutrients, and then what they spit out is something that doesn't have any odor, carbon dioxide, water. So they're able to, the biofilter is able to reduce odors typically 80 to 90%, which is almost magic.
It's almost magic because the smelly air goes in, and when it comes out a few seconds later, it doesn't smell.
We designed these biofilters to have a retention time of, say, 5 to 15 seconds of the air in the filter. And that's, you know, an average retention. We call it an empty bed retention time. So, you know, it does take some time because a couple processes have to happen. First, those gases have to be adsorbed into that biofilm, that moist biofilm. And then the bacteria get a chance to work on them. So they're captured first in the biofilm, and then they're degraded into something that doesn't have an odor.
Funk says the wood chips in the biofilter should last about 3 years. The old ones, just compost now, could be spread like manure. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Bruce Mostert of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
I'm curious to know, with the people that you work with, the producers, where are they in their 2011 marketings, their new crop?
Our 2011 marketing is higher than we've seen the last few years. Oh, 25% higher than the five-year average for new crop corn. Beans are double what our five-year average is for new crop.
Do producers tell you that that they think they can get $6 cash?
Yes. I think they're interested in that. That's kind of the magic number. There sure seems to be an awful lot of offers clustered around that level. Cash movement overall has been pretty quiet this week, up until this afternoon with the rally, getting a pop on a Friday afternoon. I think we're probably 100,000 bushel of corn long already since the board closed.
And what is the preferred contract that producers are using right now with you?
Right now, basically, we're just seeing cash sales contracts. It's being sold for January, or it's being sold for a new crop. So nothing really very exotic right now.
Well, that's interesting. What else are you keeping an eye on?
Watching basis numbers out here. Beans continue to be interesting. Corn, we actually lost a little ground this last week on some of those numbers. Export numbers on corn just aren't that great. I mean, we're setting up, watching logistics. We're set up for your typical cold weather, freeze up the Illinois, get behind on some shipments, and watch for fireworks on the CN or into the St. Louis market, and that's something we'll have to keep an eye on.
Very quickly, your prices.
We are at $5.78 for January corn and $12.84 on soybeans.
Thanks, Bruce.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostert of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. In 2 minutes, I'll be back with a look at agricultural weather. It's National Maple Syrup Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1843, Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol was published. In 1857, Sir Francis Beaufort died. He invented the wind force scale. Officially adopted by the British Admiralty in 1838, it used numbers 0 to 12 to designate calm, light air, light breeze, gentle breeze, moderate breeze, fresh breeze, strong breeze, moderate gale, fresh gale, strong gale, whole gale, storm, and hurricane. In 1870, Bert Benjamin was born. An American inventor, he is responsible for the Farmall tractor and the power takeoff system on agricultural tractors. The Farmall was the first tractor that could plow and cultivate row crops. Benjamin, a graduate from Iowa State College, held 140 patents, ranging from a corn picker to a corn shredder to a corn binder. He spent nearly 40 years with the International Harvester Company. In 1892, George Brayton died. An American engineer, he invented the first commercial gas internal combustion engine. In 1903, powered human flight was achieved by the Wright brothers at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. And in 1940, corn silk was recorded by Guy Lombardo and his Royal Canadians. And that's this day in agricultural history. Listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Is it true a couple of storm systems are headed our way?
Yeah, it looks like we're going to see something very similar to what we experienced this week with the storm that dropped about 2 to 4 inches of snow across central Illinois, especially. Looks like that probably will come in on Monday, Tuesday time frame. Very similar type thing with the low passing to our south, snow on one side of it, and then some freezing rain, freezing drizzle on the southern fringes of the storm. So exactly, the path is exactly not determined yet. There is some conflict in the models right now. The one we typically look at here, the American model called the GFS, is a little far north with the thing, but a Canadian model, which is pretty good for cold weather situations and in the winter, as you might expect, has this a little bit further south. So my take on it right now is that whatever is going to happen is going to be very much similar to what happened this week, and actually last week as well. We had two very similar storms come through here with a pretty good amount of snow, but it pretty much came straight down and no wind except, you know, other than that little storm this weekend.
And might we have a white Christmas, in other words, some snow on Christmas Day?
Some snow on Christmas Day, that's possible. Probably be more like snow showers or flurries if we do, but that's certainly in the cards. We're sort of in this pattern where we are getting weather systems through here every couple of days, and the timing would be right for possibly something around Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, but it doesn't look like it would be a travel situation type storm where it's going to really mess things up. Be more like snow showers or flurries probably.
The temperature's going to remain below normal.
Yeah, we're gonna we're running about 12 degrees below normal right now, pretty much across the state. It varies a little bit, but it's well below normal, and it's not likely we're going to get much above normal the rest of the month. The way the pattern's shaping up, we'll have some milder days probably, especially ahead of storm systems. But in general, we're going to end this month being pretty far below normal.
My impression is, based on my memory, that it snowed more in this December thus far than in previous years. Is that right?
In recent years, yes. We're about number 7 right now in total snowfall for December record. The record actually was in 1983 when we had a little over 19 inches of snow. That was a really cold December. That set the record for both temperature and snowfall. So we get another one, or we need to get a two-inch storms, and we could easily be up near the record snowfall for December. So we've had certainly more than our usual allotment of snow.
20 seconds to go. What else are you keeping your eye on?
Well, we're just watching this cold weather pattern because it doesn't look like it's going to break for good anytime soon. And the only good thing is we are getting moisture, so that for most of Illinois, and that's certainly helping.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, Dave.
That's Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. And that's today's Closing Market Report. You can listen to the show again on our website at WILLAG.org, or you can subscribe to the podcast in the right navigation window of that same website, WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.